Good morning. We are at the end of Kuf Ayin Hey Amud Beis. Let's go back to about eight lines before the end of Kuf Ayin Hey Amud Beis. Rav Shmuel D'Amri Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel are both of the opinion. Milval Peh, alone, that's not in a document, but only witnessed by witnesses, an oral loan, Eino gova lomen ayorshim lomen alakuchos. The lender does not collect from the heirs, from the children, nor from those who bought fields from the borrowers. My time of why? What's the reasoning of Rav Shmuel? They hold shibud alavdo oraisa. The idea that there is a lien, the idea that there is an obligation on property once a person borrows, is not a biblical idea. However, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Dami Tarvayu, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say, Milval Peh, an oral loan, Gova Beimen Ayarshim, Ubeimen Alakuchos. He does collect from the heirs, or he could collect it from people who bought land from the borrower. What do you mean he can collect it from people who bought land from the borrower? Our Mishnah says he can't. So there are two, some change the girsa here, that Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish said he can collect from the heirs, but not from those who buy from the borrower. Or what Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish are saying is that Dvar Torah, the biblical law, is that you would be able to collect from the buyer. However, the rabbis, as we saw yesterday, made an enactment because they wanted to protect buyers who are unawares. If it's oral, the buyer is unaware. They wanted to keep the markets open. So therefore, they said, you can't collect from buyers. But biblically, you would have been able to collect from a buyer. My time, a why? Why would it have been that biblically you should have been able to collect from a buyer in an oral loan? It's that shibuda d'oraisa. The idea that there is a lien, that there is an obligation whenever there's a borrowing, is a biblical concept. So now the Gemara says, I'll challenge Rav and Shmuel, Meisvei, I'll challenge you from the following source. We lived in a brisa that if an ox kills a person, so then we're supposed to stone the ox. And if this is the fourth time the ox is doing it, the owner of the ox has to pay a payment called kofar. So, achofer bor b'rishus harabim. Let's say a person digs a pit in a public domain. V'nafal alav shor v'harago. And an ox falls on him and kills him. Patur, the ox, does not get stoned. Because the person is damaging himself by digging the pit. So once he dug the pit, he caused the ox to fall in and kill him. So the ox doesn't get stoned for killing him. Below, not only that, Elishim Mesa Shore, if the ox died in this pit that the digger dug while killing the digger, Yorshe Balabor, the descendants, the heirs of the owner of the pit, Chayavim L'shalom, they need to pay to Meshor L'balav. They need to pay the value of this ox to the owner of the ox, because their father was responsible for killing the ox by digging the pit. So now, according to Rav and Shmuel, that alone that's not in a document, heirs don't have to pay. Where is there a document saying that the heirs are liable? There was no document here. This is damage. This is at best an oral loan, and yet the heirs need to pay to the owner of the ox. Amar Biloy, Amar Rav, Mishamed Badin. Talk about a case where the ox fell in and it dies, and the man who dug the pit, the father of these heirs, has already been put on trial. And then he dies. And then his heirs need to pay. So what do you mean, then he dies? Well, Argo Katani, but it said that he dug a pit. The ox fell in and killed him. So if the ox killed him, what do you mean he was put on trial? So Amar Avada Bar Ahava, the ox didn't kill him right away. The ox fell on him and Aso Trefa, made him, wounded him. He's not going to live very long. He's going to die from these wounds. But now the court is trying to put him on trial for having dug the pit. The court puts him on trial for having dug the pit and convicts him to pay for the ox. And then he breathes his last. And then the children need to pay. Even though children generally don't have to pay debts that are not in a document, but once there's a court ruling, that's the equivalent of a document. And then children need to pay. So the Gemara asks, is that really the case? I have Amar Rav Nachman, but didn't Rav Nachman say, Tane Tana, the Tana, you explain this, the Tana explains this price, and the Tana who teaches this price explains that mace, that the person who dug the pit died because the ox fell on him, the kavro, and the ox buried him. The ox buried him over there. So what do you mean that he was first put into court, and the court convicted him for having dug the pit, and that's why later his children have to pay for the damage? He's already dead. So the rest of the case is, Hasam de Yasve Dayana Puma de Bira. The ox fell on him and wounded him, and there were judges who were sitting on the edge of the pit. So vichivuhu. So they obligated him right there when the ox fell on him. And then he died. Amar Rav Papa. Okay, so that resolves that question. So again, we learned that Rav and Shmuel say, why it's not, if you say that, right, so that's the point. Well, it's not a milva b'shtar. So if it's not a milva b'shtar, not a milva, that's right. It's a chov. It's a chov mamoni. But we're saying but a milva al peh is also chov mamoni. If you say shibuda lavda oraisa, that whenever you have to pay money, there's no lien on property, why should the children have to pay? Shibuda lavda oraisa, there's no lien on the property. So the answer is, so here there was a lien, because here there was already a court ruling. That's it, the children have to pay.
Right, that's how it works. Damages, once you owe something based on the court and you sell your possession, there's a lien on this property, right?
Yeah, once the court says, then already it's famous, sure. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, Hilchasa the halacha is milval peh, an oral loan, govim in a yorshin. You do collect from orphans, but you don't collect from buyers who bought land from the borrower. So government ayorshim, you collect from the heirs. Kadesh lotin odelis bifnei lovin. We want to encourage people to lend. So to encourage people to lend, we want to make it easy for people to get their money back. If it's very hard and very rare for people to get their money back, then people don't want to lend. So we want to encourage lending, because that ultimately helps the poor, because the poor are the ones who need the loans the most. So because we want to encourage the borrowers not to be able, we want to help the borrowers, we want to keep the lending doors open. So therefore, we say that if a person borrowed, even orally, his children need to pay back. However, if he dies, he doesn't have any money. I'm sorry, or if when the loan comes due, he doesn't have the money to pay, but he's sold off pieces of land. Eino govman alakuchos, the lender who didn't lend in a contract, but just lent orally, cannot collect from the buyers of the land. The less le kala, because as we've learned before, a loan in a contract, a loan in a document, becomes well known. But a loan that's not in a contract, a loan that's just done in front of witnesses, is not well known. And since it's not well known, so there's no kol. So since it's not well known, we also have to look out for the welfare of the buyers. Here a buyer bought land from this person. He had no reason to think that he's taking a risk, that this land might be taken. He didn't know about these loans. He did a title search. But a title search can only show up written records. It can't show up oral events. So therefore, to protect him, you can't collect from the buyer, even though we would want to enable you to collect from the buyer in order to encourage lending. But we can't do that at the expense of trying to protect innocent buyers. So since the innocent buyer didn't know about the milval peh, there's no collection of a milval peh from a buyer. But because we want to encourage lending, there is a collection from a milval peh from heirs. And then when you have a milva b'shtar, a loan in a document, as we looked at our Mishnah, so then you have a shibud, then you have a lien on the property that you can collect both from the buyers and from the heirs.
Well, Rabbi, what happens, first of all, if the heirs have no money to pay?
Then they can't pay.
The lender is a loser here.
The lender could be the loser.
Okay.
But in halacha, is an important point, there's no statute of limitations. So there's no idea. There's no idea that, you know, with time it disappears. I mean, you have Shemitah. Besides Shemitah. No, not for a loan, just for theft. People get sold.
What happens if you sold the land a long time ago before his death? Okay. Is he still the buyer?
Yeah, as long as he borrowed before he sold, yeah.
Oh, borrowed before he sold.
Yeah. Yeah, but if he sold before he borrowed, then not.
Then not, okay. All right.
So, and, you know, an important point is that in secular law, there's bankruptcy. You know, if a person can't pay his debts, you know, there's some type of an arrangement of a settlement and everything else is forgiven. But halacha doesn't have a concept of bankruptcy. If a person borrows, he has to pay back.
In the case with the shore with government.
No, chapter 11.
Yeah.
Not 11 and not 7, maybe.
Because there's no issue of Shalotin Ol Delas Pifnei Lovin. It's not a loan, so it's a chiyuv, but there's no loan that we want to encourage lending, so we have to come up with a case that the obligation happened before he died.
And Rabbi setting oneself is only for theft, not for debt.
Yes. So now, going back to the Mishnah taught all about the idea of collecting from buyers. So it said, Hotzi alav ksav yado shu chayev lo. If instead of a loan document, there is a note from the borrower saying that he owes to the lender, government achasa b'nei chorin, the lender can collect from assets in the hands of the borrower, but not from fields that the borrower sold. Rabbi Bar Nassan asked the question of Rabbi Yochanan. What happens if it started off as a note of a lender, but then it was validated in court, and the judges put their signatures on this note? So now is it considered a loan document? So that if there is a sale from now, the lender can collect that? Or maybe it doesn't become a loan document. It was always a note. It never becomes a loan document. So that's Rabbi Bar Nassan's question of Rabbi Yochanan. Let's say at one point the lender is a little bit nervous whether or not he's going to be able to collect with this note from the borrower. So he goes into the court and he validates the note. So my, do we say that from the point of validation and on it becomes a loan document? With the ability for the lender to collect from buyers from that point? Or do we say no, since it started off as a note without witnesses, it's not a loan document, it never becomes a loan document. Amalesi told him, Afal Pisha Uchzak Savyadim Bevezdin, even if later the lender validated the note in a court, Eino Govelim in Chasim B'nei Chorin, it still stays as a note, it doesn't become a loan document. And the lender can only collect from assets in the hands of the borrower, but not from fields that the borrower has sold.
This is with witnesses or without?
No witnesses.
No witnesses.
There was the note of the borrower.
Correct.
And later, a bunch of judges who signed to validate it. So the judges are not the same as witnesses.
Yeah, okay.
Masiv Rami Bar Chama challenged this idea of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is saying it's hard to make something into a loan document, but we learned that it's pretty easy to make something into a good document. We learned Shlosha Gittin Psulim. There are three Gittin that Midrabanan are not kosher. However, since Midoraisa they're kosher, if a woman got such a get, the Nisei since she married based on the get, Havlad kosher, the child would be a kosher child. He wouldn't be considered a mamzer, a married woman's child. Ve'eluhein, these are the cases of the three kosher gittin. One, kasav b'chsav yado. If the husband wrote the get in his own handwriting, ve'ein alav eidim, without any witnesses signed on it. But when the get was handed over, there were witnesses who saw the handover. Two, yesh alav eidim, ve'ein bozman. There are witnesses in the document, but there was no date in the document. But again, there were witnesses who saw the handover. Or, yesh bozman, there's a date in the document, but ein bo ella eid echa. There's only one witness signed, but again, there were two witnesses who saw the handover. So, arei elu, in these three cases, these are shlosha gittin psulim. You know, the rabbis disqualified such gittin. They said a woman who has a get like this should not remarry. She should get a new get. But in Mises, if she did remarry based on this get, havlad kasha. The child is not a mom's, and the child is kasha.
So the fact that he himself writes, it's not an issue. He can write. It's,
if there's Ede Masira. Ede Masira.
You don't have to have a sofer.
Right? That's true.
Doesn't need the get.
So one second. Rabbi Lazar, Omer Rabbi Lazar says, Afal pisha ein alav edim. Ela shenastin la bifnei edim. Kasher. The government of Chasim and Shubadim. The Belazar says that a get that doesn't have any witnesses on it, but was handed over in front of witnesses, is kasha lechatkila, because Eidim Masira Karti, the main thing that matters are the witnesses who see the handover. And with this get, she can collect her ksuba, even from assets that her husband has sold off. So one second, you see it as the status of a loan document, even though there are no witnesses on it. So if that's the case, so then we should say the same in regards to a loan note written by the borrower that later gets validated. So that should certainly be considered like a loan document to be able to collect. Like, why is there a big difference? Shiny Hassan, there's a big difference between Rebbe Lazar's get and what we're talking about. There, the Mishas Ksiva Hu Deshah Beit Nafshe. When a person wrote that get with the intent of, you know, witnesses are going to see the handover. So then you know when you're writing it's going to be a good document and the witnesses are going to see the handover. But it's going to be considered a document that's going to be able to collect from assets that have been bought. But here, it was originally not a good document. It was just a note from the borrower. Later, it should become a good document that we never saw. If there was a document initially created to be a document, but not with witnesses in it, just with witnesses witnessing the handover, so it was created, though, to be a good document from the very beginning. So that works. But in our case, at the very beginning, it wasn't a good document. It was just a note of the borrower. So now later we're going to say that when the judge has validated, it becomes a document that we've never seen. And that's what we say, that lehalacha, it doesn't become a document.
By the way, those days, they lend the money really not to do mitzvah. They lend the money to make interest.
They couldn't make interest.
Oh, couldn't. So if there was an interest involved here,
they wouldn't do it. There was Besdin that would encourage people, force people not to lend with interest.
Not with interest.
Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah went on and said that there was a dispute between Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Nanas about a guarantor who signs a document after the witnesses. Arei vayotze v'achar chisum shtaros. That Ben Nanas held it doesn't work, and Rabbi Shmuel held it could work. So Amar Rav, before that dispute, the Mishnah said, Arei vayotze l'achar chisum shtaros, if a guarantor signed after the witnesses, so then you can't collect from the assets that the guarantor sells off. It's like a milval pet, it's like an oral loan. You can only collect from assets that the guarantor has in his hand. So Amar Rav, so Rav said, but if the guarantor signed kodem chisum shtaros, the guarantor signed before the witnesses signed, then government of Chasim and Shubadim. And the lender can collect from the assets that the guarantor sold off. La'achar chisum shtaros. But if the guarantor signed after the witnesses, So government achasa b'nei charen, then you have the law of the Mishnah that the lender can only collect from assets that are in the hands of the guarantor, not those that he sold off. But at other times, Rav would say, afilu kodem chisum shtaros, even if it's written in the document before the witness is signed that there is a guarantor and he's obligated, eino govel min achasa b'nei charen. You can't collect from the assets that the guarantor sells off. You can only collect from the assets that the guarantor has in his hand. So one second, kasha derav aderav. So we have a contradiction in Rav. If the guarantor is before the witness's signature, does that create an obligation on assets that even if they were sold off, they can be collected or not? And so the Gemara lo kasha, there's no contradiction. Ha dekasav be ploni arev. One is where it says in the document, Yaakov is the guarantor, and then it has the witness's sign. So if it says Yaakov is the guarantor, and then it has the witness's sign, then it's not that the being a guarantor is part of what the witnesses are testifying about. It's a separate thing. The witnesses are saying Shimon borrowed from Reuven. Yaakov is a guarantor. We're not talking about. That's something else. So then that does not create a lien on property. Hadiksibbe, when did Rav say that the guarantor's assets have a lien on them, and the lender can collect from them even after they're sold? If it's written, uploni arev. It says, Reuven borrowed from Shimon, and so-and-so is the guarantor. So by saying, and so-and-so is the guarantor, and then the witness is signed, then the witness's signature is about that as well. However, Rabbi Yochanan said, echad zeh ve'echad zeh, both when it says, ploni arev, and when it says, uploni arev, eino go ve'lo min achasam b'nei chorin. You can't collect from the assets of the guarantor that have been sold off. You can only collect from the assets of the guarantor that are still in hand. Asks the Gemara, really? The afal gav l'ksibbe uploni arev? And even though it says, and ploni is the guarantor, even so, the witnesses we say are not signing about him, but masav rava, but rava challenges, we learned. A get is supposed to be a document of separation between husband and wife. What happens if within the get, it says that the husband told the people writing the get, I want you to look out for the welfare of the woman. There's a problem here. What is it? Is it a get? Is it not a get? That's not normal. So if we have Edom HaChasum Al She'ela Shalom Beget, we have a get document, but within the get document, it also has, you know, a whole request about the welfare of the wife, and the witness is signed. So puzzle, that's not a kosher get. Chashinan, because then we're worried, Shem al Sheila Shalom Chasm. Maybe they're vouching for the fact that he's seeking out her welfare, but they're not vouching for the get. I heard an explanation of this from Rabbi Yochanan himself. If it says, She'ilu Shalom, go ask for the welfare, puzzle, then it's disqualified, because maybe the witnesses are only signing about that. But if it says, U'she'ilu Shalom, it says, go divorce her and ask for her welfare. So the and means that the witnesses are about everything. So then it is kosher. So one second. So here you said that according to Rabbi Yochanan, if the witnesses are signed on the bottom and it says, uploni arev, and so is the guarantor, the witnesses are not vouching for him being a guarantor. What do you mean? If it says, ushi'ilu, then they are vouching for everything in regards to a get. Once it would say, uploni arev, we should say that the witnesses are vouching for everything. So Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Hachanami l'ksiv ploni arev. When did Rabbi Yochanan say that you can't collect from the assets of the guarantor that he sold off? When you have witnesses who signed the loan document, and on top of them in the loan document it says so-and-so is the guarantor, not and so-and-so is the guarantor. Yochi, if that's the case, hanu derav. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying the same thing as Rav. So why do we have to have Rabbi Yochanan Amman? Rabbi Yochanan is saying as if he's disagreeing. Amos, you're right. You have to change it. V'chein Amman Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan also said that. So in other words, in conclusion, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rav are of the opinion that if the loan document has the guarantor before the witnesses and it says, and so-and-so is the guarantor, then the witnesses are signing about the guarantee as well. If it just says so-and-so is the guarantor, then the witnesses are not signing about the guarantor, and you can't collect from the assets the guarantor sold. You can only collect from the assets that the guarantor has in hand. Then the Mishnah taught us a dispute between Rabbi Yishmael and Ben Nanas. So first, the Mishnah says if the guarantor is after the witnesses, you can't collect from the assets that he sold off. You can only collect from the assets that he has in hand. Then Benana says, I don't even think you can collect from the assets that he has in hand. Benanas gave the following argument. If a guy sees a lender choking a borrower, and the guy tells the lender, hey, don't worry, it's on me. Are we really going to say that it's on him? No, he just did it to save the life of the borrower. So here too, if the guarantor signed after the loan, after the witnesses, he's not obligated. The only thing that would obligate a guarantor is if he made the loan happen. But after the witnesses already signed and there's already a loan, so then he's not obligated. And Rabbi Shmuel disagreed. But then Rabbi Shmuel said, anyone who wants to become wise should study the laws of monetary law, because there's no area as broad as the laws of monetary law. And if you want to study monetary law, study from Shimon Ben Nanas. Yeah, question?
All right. If we go back to when we studied what sign is on top and what sign is on bottom, and if someone signed a get as a witness, all legal, the whole get is legal and signed as a witness, and then on the bottom makes a statement and doesn't use the word end, it just says take good care of the wife and signs there, does that supersede the other signature?
It might, yeah.
For the witness.
It might. So if that's, well, it wouldn't supersede another signature.
So it means the get is not good.
No, it wouldn't supersede another signature. If we had separate signatures on the get part, then we know that's kosher.
No, the same person.
Still, it'd still be kosher, yeah. So now, Maisa, again, there was a story of Olifnei Rabbi Shmuel, such a get. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi the son of Bar Chana said to him, Rabbi Yochanan, Afal Pishakilis Rabbi Shmuel is bananas, even though Rabbi Shmuel praises bananas. Halacha Kimoso, Halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel, that a guarantor who signs after witnesses, there is an obligation on the guarantor, it's just an obligation that's oral, it's not an obligation on the property. Ibailu, they had a question. Let's go back to the scenario. The hypothetical scenario that Bananas brought up, Bechanak, in a case where the lender is choking the borrower, Mali. So what is the halacha over there? Do we say over there, halacha is like Bananas? Or Mali, Amar Rabbi Shmuel, what would Rabbi Shmuel say there? So Tashma, come in here, Amar Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov said, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chalak Hayir Rabbi Shmuel, Af Bechanak. Rabbi Shmuel holds that even when the lender is choking the borrower, and the guarantor jumps in and says, hey, let him go and I'll pay, then he does become obligated. Okay, so is halacha kimoso and halacha kimoso? Is halacha like Rabbi Shmuel in that or not? So Tashma come in here, the chiyasa Ravan am Rabbi Yochanan. When Ravan came to Bavel from Israel, he brought a tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the Rosh Yeshiva of Israel. Chalukai Rabbi Shmuel, af b'chanuk. Rabbi Shmuel argued, even in the case of the lender choking the borrower, Halacha kimoso af b'chanuk, and halacha is like him, even in that case that the guarantor does become obligated. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says, in the name of Shmuel, that according to everyone, apparently, chanuk, if a lender is choking a borrower and a guarantor comes and says, "Don't worry, I'll pay." The kanumiyado and the lender and the guarantor do an act of acquisition, a kinyan chalipin, mishtabed, then the guarantor becomes obligated. So Gemara says, Michal, does this imply to Arif Ba'alma, a regular guarantor, lo bai kinyan? He doesn't need, apparently this means that a regular guarantor doesn't need an act of acquisition, just his words make him obligated.
A guarantor at the time of the loan.
Yeah. Yeah, or a guarantor in the other case, right? A guarantor after the witnesses.
Rabbi, if he says, he's on me, is the difference between he's on me or I will pay, is the difference in the language?
No, that's the same.
It's the same, right?
Yeah. Upliga, but this idea that a guarantor doesn't need to do an act of acquisition to become obligated is against Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Arev de Bezdin, who de lo boi kinyan. If the guarantor is in court, and because of his promise to pay, the court is acting on his behalf and making the loan happen, then he doesn't need an act of acquisition to be obligated. Haba alma, but if it's just that because of his words, the lender acted, By kinyan, he still needs an act of acquisition to become obligated. The hilchasa, the halacha is arev, a guarantor. Bishas matan ma'os, at the time when the loan is being given. Lo by kinyan, he doesn't need an act of acquisition because since it's based on his words that the lender is lending, there's such pleasure, he becomes obligated. But if he's a guarantor, after the witness is signed, after the loan already happened, he needs an act of acquisition in order to become obligated.
Not yet. Not yet. Not yet. Not yet.